So imagine this. You're sitting in Los Angeles or, maybe New York, and you're just watching your local housing prices climb completely into the stratosphere.
Right, it's wild out there on the coast right now.
It really is. And then your friend tells you that they just bought a rental property in Nashville, but they did it directly from their laptop.
Just click buy.
Exactly. They're managing the whole thing from three states away. They're capturing solid yields, and they haven't swung a single hammer. I mean, it sounds like a cheat code.
Oh, totally. Sounds like magic.
Right. But the reality is the 2026 Nashville market is no longer this chaotic lottery ticket where you could just buy blind and watch an asset triple in value.
No, not at all. What's fascinating here is that the market hasn't broken, but it has absolutely matured. Like,
Yeah.
if we look back at the early 2020s, out-of-state money just flooded in. People had this assumption that any property anywhere in Davidson County was a guaranteed gold mine.
Yeah, it was super speculative, like the Wild West.
Exactly. But now
Yeah.
it is a highly fundamentals-driven market. It really demands a rigorous analytical approach if you're going to allocate capital there.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission for this deep dive today is to dissect a really comprehensive 2026 report. It's from Run Home Rentals.
Right, the active real estate investment group down there.
Yep, they do cash offers and operate right in Nashville. So we are going to look under the hood to see what it actually takes to succeed as a remote investor in this specific environment today.
Because, I mean, managing a physical asset from 2,000 miles away requires way more than just optimism.
You need actual systems.
You need bulletproof system.
So if Nashville has graduated to behaving more like, say, a reliable blue chip stock, we really need to look at the underlying economics. The report shows a median home price of $475,000.
Which is still a shock to a lot of coastal buyers.
Oh, for sure. And the average one bedroom rents are sitting at $1,745. But I guess the big question is, why is out of state capital still so aggressively targeting this specific metro in 2026?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the magnetism really comes down to a structural arbitrage.
Structural arbitrage.
Yeah, that coastal investors are just heavily leveraging. And the most glaring factor is the tax environment.
Right. Tennessee has zero state income tax.
Zero. So for an investor operating out of California or New York, simply sheltering your investment income in a zero tax state fundamentally changes your net yield.
Wow. Okay.
The report calculates that just shifting capital into this environment saves these investors anywhere from $5,000 to like $15,000.
Wait, really? Just in taxes?
Or more, yeah, in annual take-home pay simply by crossing state lines.
So it's literally an immediate padding of their profit margin before the property even appreciates one cent.
Exactly. It's a massive head start.
But, I mean, tax incentives only matter if the property actually stays rented. You need a tenant to pay that rent.
Precisely. And that brings us to the employment bedrock of the area. The market isn't relying purely on hospitality or tourism anymore.
Like the bachelorette party capital of the world stuff.
Right, that's still there, but you have heavy, entrenched corporate infrastructure anchoring the local economy now.
Who are the big players right now?
We are looking at Amazon's operations hub, Oracle's national headquarters, HCA Healthcare, and of course, Vanderbilt Medical Center.
That is a lot of high-paying jobs.
It is. These entities create this sustained, predictable pipeline of high-earning professionals who all require housing. That constant inflow is the direct mechanism driving the current 3.1% rental vacancy rate.
Which is incredibly low.
It really is. Basically, if you price a unit to the market, the demographic demand absorbs it almost immediately.
Okay, but I want to challenge that narrative for just a second.
Sure.
Because there is a massive plot twist in this 2026 data. The report explicitly highlights that the market is actually cooling for sellers.
Yes, it is.
Like, properties are now sitting on the market for an average of 102 days, and sellers are actively offering concessions, incentives, buy downs, all that.
Yeah, that's a big shift.
Right. So if the fundamentals are so strong, why are houses sitting for over 3 months? I mean, if I am an out-of-state buyer looking at the market with rising days on market, that sounds a lot like catching a falling knife.
I get that.
Why should you buy into an asset class that is clearly decelerating?
That is the totally natural reaction, but you really have to separate market normalization from a market crash.
Okay, explain that.
What you are describing as a falling knife is actually the return of buyer leverage.
Oh, interesting.
Think about the pandemic era frenzy. The cost of capital was artificially low, which completely stripped buyers of any negotiating power.
But you had to waive everything just to get a call back.
Exactly. You were forced into a high-risk posture, waiving inspections, bidding 50 grand over ask, and just rushing all your due diligence.
It was exhausting.
It was unsustainable. So 102 days on the market isn't a sign of economic collapse. It's a sign of a balanced market.
So it's actually good for the remote buyer.
It's incredible for them. For a remote investor, a property sitting for 3 months means the seller is experiencing holding fatigue.
They're ready to make a deal.
Exactly. You suddenly have the temporal runway to execute proper due diligence, actually negotiate the purchase price, and demand concessions that improve your entry basis.
Okay, I see the logic there. You're basically trading the rapid, speculative appreciation of 2021 for the operational leverage of 2026.
Precisely. You get to breathe and make a smart business decision.
But, you know, leverage only works if you can actually deploy the capital. And here's where it gets really interesting in the report.
The financing side.
Yeah. If an investor has a complex financial profile, say you're self-employed in California, or you have highly variable W-2 income, walking into a traditional consumer bank to get a mortgage for a rental property in Tennessee is an absolute administrative nightmare.
It's brutal. They want to see every piece of paper you've touched in 5 years.
Right. Yet this report details a financing mechanism that basically bypasses personal income constraints entirely.
You are referring to DSCR loans.
Yes, the cheat code.
Right. DSCR loans have become the primary vehicle for this type of remote capital deployment. It stands for Debt Service Coverage Ratio.
Okay, walk me through that.
Well, it represents a fundamental shift in how the bank assesses risk. Traditional banking looks at the borrower, right? Your personal debt-to-income ratio, your tax returns, your salary history.
Yeah, the usual stuff.
But a DSCR lender looks almost exclusively at the asset itself. They are underwriting the property's ability to generate cash, completely decoupled from whatever your day job is.
Wait, so walk me through the mechanics of that. Yeah. How does the bank actually calculate that risk without looking at my personal cash flow? Like, how do they know I'm good for it?
Because it's a pure mathematical ratio based on the house. The lender takes the expected monthly gross rent of the property and divides it by the total monthly carrying costs.
So that's the mortgage taxes.
Yep, the principal, the interest, the taxes, the insurance, and any HOA fees. If the property generates exactly enough rent to cover those specific expenses, the ratio is 1.0.
Meaning the asset literally pays for itself?
Exactly.
So a 1.0 is the absolute break-even point. What is the actual threshold lenders are demanding in the 2026 Nashville market to greenlight these loans?
Currently, lenders require a DSCR ratio between 1.0 and 1.25.
Okay, so they want a little bit of a buffer.
Did we want to see that buffer, yeah. And to secure this financing, the barrier to entry requires a minimum credit score of 640.
That's pretty accessible.
It is, though, realistically, optimizing your interest rate requires a 700 or above, and you will need a 20 to 25% down payment.
Okay, so you still need cash on hand.
Oh, absolutely. You need the equity in the deal. Rates are currently starting around 6.9% for well-qualified assets.
Got it.
And structurally, this is vital. These loans allow you to close the transaction directly into an LLC.
Oh, which provides the liability firewall for out-of-state operators.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is huge when you live thousands of miles away from your tenant.
So if I know the target ratio is 1.25 and I know rates are at 6.9%, I can literally reverse engineer my entire buying strategy before I even look at a listing on Zillow.
That's the beauty of it.
I know exactly what my maximum purchase price can be based on the prevailing neighborhood rents.
Exactly. It removes all the emotion from the acquisition. And that leads directly to the geographic constraint.
Right, the map.
Because the math of a DSCR loan physically forces you into specific pockets of the city. You cannot apply a cash flow financing strategy to an appreciation-heavy neighborhood.
Because the ratios simply won't mathematically clear.
Right. A million-dollar house renting for $3,000 a month fails the DSCR test instantly.
So what does this all mean for the actual map of Nashville? Because the report treats the city's submarkets almost like different asset classes on a menu.
They really are.
Your choice of neighborhood basically dictates your entire operational strategy.
Mm.
Let's look at Antioch, for example.
Okay, yeah.
The report flags Antioch as the premier cash flow engine. We are looking at a lower acquisition cost, right around $340,000, but it supports rents of roughly $1,800 a month.
Antioch works specifically because it serves as the workforce housing hub.
Sure.
As the urban core prices out essential workers and mid-level professionals, that demographic demand just shifts outward. So an entry price of $340,000 paired with an $1,800 rent easily clears that 1.25 DSCR hurdle.
You are maximizing your monthly yield.
Precisely. Similarly, the report points to Madison.
Right, Madison.
It offers a slightly lower entry at around $320,000 with $1,700 rents. It provides excellent geographical access to Davidson County, capturing that exact same workforce demand.
But what if an investor isn't prioritizing immediate yield? What if they want to park capital in a growth asset, knowing the DSCR will be incredibly tight, maybe hovering right at 1.05 or something?
They just want the premium property.
Exactly.
Then the capital flows into East Nashville, but the economics shift dramatically there.
How much are we talking?
The average entry price jumps to $480,000. Now, it commands premium rents, around $2,200 a month, driven by high walkability and dense commercial development.
But the cash flow isn't there.
Right. Because the acquisition cost is so heavily weighted by future growth expectations, your monthly cash flow is super marginal.
Okay.
If an investor deploys capital into East Nashville expecting Antioch-level cash flows, they have fundamentally misread the mechanism of that specific submarket.
That's a classic growth versus dividend stock scenario.
It's exactly that.
The report also highlights a few neighborhoods in transition. The Nations is flagged as a rapid appreciation play.
Oh, yeah. The Nations is hot right now.
Entry is around 460,000, heavily driven by commercial revitalization that's pushing residential demand.
Yep.
And then there is Hermitage,
yeah,
which operates on a completely different metric. Stability. It's more suburban, anchored by strong school districts.
And the mechanism in Hermitage is all about tenant retention.
Right, because families don't want to move.
Exactly. Families tied to school districts do not turn over their leases every 12 months. By reducing turnover, you eliminate the leasing fees, the touch-up paint, the vacancy periods that typically erode an investor's annual yield.
It's a lower velocity, higher stability asset.
That's a great way to put it.
And then there's the wild card in the report, which I found strategically fascinating. Wedgewood, Houston. They label it an underrated value.
Yeah, that area is really interesting.
The underlying driver there is industrial to residential rezoning. It's developing this whole arts district and brewery culture that is rapidly pulling in young professionals. Yet the entry basis remains below the city average.
Which perfectly illustrates why your strategy must precede your geography. The neighborhood is just the physical manifestation of the financial model you chose during underwriting.
I love that. So you've selected the model, you ran the DSCR math, you locked down the capital, and let's say you acquire the asset in Antioch.
Okay, you own it.
Now we hit the operational reality. You own a physical structure 2,000 miles away. If a pipe bursts at 2 a.m. or a tenant stops paying, you are geographically paralyzed.
And this is the critical juncture where remote investors either scale up or they completely fail.
Yeah, it's the scary part.
The report establishes a definitive rule here. The property management firm is the investment.
Wait, really? The firm itself?
Yes. The physical house is secondary.
Wow.
Because an incompetent management team will rapidly destroy whatever margin you modeled in your DSCR calculations.
Through high vacancy rates or something.
High vacancy rates, ignoring preventative maintenance, or just poor tenant screening. A bad manager will cost you tens of thousands of dollars.
The report specifically quantifies what a competent team looks like, too. They identify a very specific Goldilocks zone for the size of a property management portfolio, between 50 and 500 units. Why that specific bracket?
It's really about corporate infrastructure.
Okay.
Think about it. If a firm manages fewer than 50 units, they likely lack the enterprise-level software, the dedicated accounting departments, and the leveraged vendor relationships you need.
So they might just be like a solo real estate agent dabbling in management on the side.
Exactly. But conversely, a firm managing 5,000 units is heavily institutionalized.
You're just a number.
Right. Your single-family home in Antioch is just a rounding error on their balance sheet. So the 50 to 500 range is large enough to afford robust operational systems, but small enough to remain actively engaged with your individual property.
And standard compensation for that operational tier in Nashville sits between 8 and 12% of collected rent. But how do these bad firms actually hide their inefficiencies? Because the report mentions several red flags to audit for when you're interviewing managers.
Yeah, the most predatory mechanism is the empty unit fee.
The empty unit fee. That sounds awful.
It is. If a management company charges you a base fee while the property is vacant, their financial incentive to place a tenant is severely misaligned with yours.
Because they're getting paid anyway.
Right. They are generating revenue without performing the core function of their job.
That is definitely a massive red flag.
Another critical audit point is communication latency. If a firm takes more than 24 hours to respond to a prospective client offering them new business.
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
Yeah, you can accurately extrapolate how they will handle an emergency maintenance request from an existing tenant.
If they don't care about getting your money, they won't care about fixing your sink. This naturally leads into the technological ecosystem required to monitor these teams. Because, I mean, you can't just hand over the keys and look away. The report details a specific tech stack that essentially serves as the remote control for your asset.
Yes. The modern remote investor relies on integrated data visibility. You have to see what's happening.
What are the main tools?
Well, the report highlights Stessa for automated real-time accounting.
Okay, so that handles the bookkeeping.
Yeah, it categorizes cash flow directly for tax reporting, which is huge and usually free. Then Baselane acts as the dedicated banking infrastructure.
To keep things clean.
Exactly, cleanly severing personal capital from asset capital. And for risk mitigation, they point to Smart Move by TransUnion.
What does that do?
It offloads the cost of comprehensive credit and background screening directly to the applicant. You don't pay a dime to screen them.
That's incredibly efficient. And for investors who want to completely bypass the whole acquisition and stabilization phase, they mentioned Roofstock.
Ah, yeah, Roofstock.
It's a platform where you can purchase turnkey assets that literally already have tenants and management systems in place. You just buy the cash flow.
Just plug and play.
But I want to pivot a bit, because despite all these systems, out-of-state capital still makes catastrophic errors in this market.
Oh, all the time.
The report outlines several specific pitfalls.
And this raises an important question. Why do highly capitalized, intelligent investors fail in fundamentally strong markets?
Right. Why mess up a good thing?
If we connect this to the broader psychological landscape, the primary failure point is anchored bias.
Anchored bias. Meaning they bring their home market mindset with them.
Exactly. An investor operating out of a hyperinflated market like Los Angeles looks at a $500,000 asset in Nashville and perceives it as inherently undervalued simply because of their localized conditioning.
Because $500,000 in LA gets you a parking spot.
Right. So they ignore the local Nashville comps, they ignore the 102 days on market, and they just overpay.
They actively destroy their own yield because they are negotiating against their home market rather than the local reality.
They bring coastal habits to a southern market.
Wow. And that habit loops right into another major trap the report flags, the waived inspection.
Aw, this one hurts to watch.
In coastal markets over the last 5 years, waiving the inspection was essentially the cost of admission to even get a bid looked at. People are still doing that.
They are. And applying that tactic in Nashville is uniquely dangerous due to the age and variability of the local housing stock.
How so?
The report is absolute on this. Never bypass a physical inspection. A remote investor relying solely on an agent's quick video walkthrough will entirely miss structural degradation, foundation issues, or end-of-life HVAC systems.
And those are not cheap fixes.
No. Bypassing a $500 diagnostic process can easily trigger a $20,000 deferred maintenance catastrophic failure within the first year.
Which perfectly explains their mandate on capital reserves. The report dictates maintaining a strict 6 months of mortgage payments in liquid reserves per property.
You have to have that cash sitting there.
Because when that deferred maintenance rears its head, a remote owner cannot just drive over and self-perform the labor. You are entirely reliant on retail pricing for emergency vendor dispatches.
Yeah, the margin of error is simply thinner when you cannot physically intervene. That 6 month reserve is the liquidity required to bridge the gap between an unexpected capital expenditure and the property returning to a stabilized cash flow.
They also briefly mentioned ignoring Metro Nashville's strict short-term rental regulations as a trap.
Yes, not every property can just be tossed on Airbnb. You have to verify zoning or you'll get shut down.
Okay, so synthesizing all of this data from the Run Home Rentals 2026 report, the narrative is really clear. Nashville remains a highly viable target for out-of-state capital.
Absolutely.
The macro drivers, the corporate relocation, the zero state income tax, the population inflow, they are structurally sound. But the execution requires extreme precision.
The math dictates the geography.
Right. If your strategy requires high monthly yield, you are deployed into Antioch or Madison. If your capital is focused on long-term wealth preservation and appreciation, you absorb the tighter margins in East Nashville or the nations.
The market has formalized. The operators capturing the highest yields over the next 5 years will be the ones who treat a single-family rental with the exact same operational rigor as a commercial facility.
And there are local safety nets built into the ecosystem for those who miscalculate, right?
Yeah, thankfully.
The report notes that Run Home Rentals itself operates a 7-day cash offer program, acquiring properties directly without requiring repairs.
Which essentially serves as a liquidity eject button.
An eject button for investors who find themselves overleveraged or burdened by failing management.
Exactly. But ultimately, reviewing the integration of these systems, the DSCR lending models that bypass personal income, the specialized accounting tech stacks, the platforms trading stabilized assets sight unseen, it presents a rather profound structural shift in how real estate operates entirely.
How so? Like, big picture.
Think about it. As the friction of remote capital deployment drops to near zero, and managing a physical structure 3 states away becomes as seamless as managing a stock portfolio on Robinhood.
Yeah.
We have to consider the long-term impact on the physical communities.
Oh, wow. I see what you mean.
What happens to the structural fabric of a neighborhood when the traditional concept of the local landlord, the operator who lives in the same municipality, who utilizes the same local infrastructure, is systematically replaced by optimized algorithms on a distant investor's phone?
That is a fundamental question about the future of housing, not just an investment metric. It underscores that we aren't just trading abstract numbers on a screen. These assets are the physical environments where communities actually exist and live their lives.
Exactly.
Thank you for walking through this analysis of the 2026 Nashville landscape and the evolving mechanics of remote capital deployment. For everyone listening, keep scrutinizing the data, keep refining your models, and we will see you on the next deep dive.